Deadline's a massive crowd of Palestinians pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in a show of unity against Israel ahead of the International Quds Day. NATO Secretary General says Finland and Sweden are welcome to join the military alliance as soon as they ask for it, in remarks likely to anger Russia. And also, insecurity dominating U.S. housing market, with a new report suggesting massive public frustration with soaring home prices. Hello and welcome, everybody. We begin this hour with the developments in Palestine, where just a day ahead of the International Quds Day, tens of thousands of Palestinians have converged on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound for a congregational prayer. Palestinian media have put the number of participants at 250,000, who gathered in a show of unity amid recent Israeli desecrations of the holy site. Following the prayers, the worshippers chanted slogans against Israel and condemned the regime for its violent crackdowns at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The gathering was held despite Israeli warnings. Journalist and activist Jafar Ramini says Palestinians have been and will remain united in their fight against the Israeli occupation.
There has always been and will always be unity amongst the Palestinian ranks, Muslims and Christians alike. This is a war for our very existence. The Israeli government, since 1948, every Israeli government, their goal and their ultimate aim is to occupy all of historical Palestine without any Palestinians in it. Jerusalem has been getting the brunt of their brutality exactly, or in a way that the Gazans have been suffocated within the last breath of their lives. Palestine, Jerusalem, Al-Aqsa Mosque, Al-Haram al-Sharif should not only be defended by the civilian Palestinians. It's a Muslim duty. And if anybody, any person, anywhere in the world, out of the 1.7 billion Muslims, the Muslim Ummah, call himself or herself a Muslim, they should come to the rescue of Jerusalem and their brothers and sisters in Palestine.
With the International Quds Day being around the corner, resistance groups have held a conference in the Lebanese capital to voice their solidarity with Palestinians. They called on Muslims to maintain their unity in supporting Al-Quds in the face of the Israeli aggression. Mariam Saleh reports from Beirut.
Just ahead of International Quds Day, support for Palestinians is gaining momentum across Lebanon. The seminar was held in the Lebanese capital, where the speakers touched upon the significance of the Quds Day.
The significance of this holy day is that Imam Khomeini called on the free people of the world and the Muslims of the world and the Christians of the world to look at this historic, religious, and national enemy which wants to steal your sanctities and Judaize your city and bury your heritage. Be cautious on this threat and be united to face this aggressive enemy.
With the violent Israeli crackdown against the people of the Holy City in Palestine, activists say the sacrifices of the Palestinians will be fruitful, and that Al-Quds Day is an occasion for Muslims to stand united in supporting the Palestinian cause.
Imam Khomeini considered that our Arab and Islamic identity is incomplete without liberating Al-Quds. Therefore, this is a shame for those who continue to normalize ties with this enemy that continues to launch the most heinous assaults with their artillery and bullets. Thousands of wounded people have lost their eyesight, and many of them lost one eye or two. Hundreds of wounded people fell in the past assault. We will eventually pray in Al-Quds, no matter how long it takes.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General also stressed that Al-Quds is not merely a piece of land. It is rather an international humane cause. And Imam Khomeini established a cultural, ethical, and religious system to liberate it.
Imam Khomeini did not only make a declaration, he put a roadmap for the liberation of Palestine. He did not only call on the people to hold commemorations and events and make speeches to celebrate a day for Al-Quds, he directly closed the Israeli embassy and opened the Palestinian embassy. He founded Al-Quds Brigade as part of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps, which would begin to form the army of 20 million. This would extend to the rest of the region and would support resistance inside Palestine. The only objective is to liberate Palestine.
All the speakers at the conference agreed that those who believe in the Palestinian cause are convinced more than ever that Al-Quds in Palestine will be liberated. International Quds Day has developed from being a day of solidarity and vocal support to being a day of practical coordination between the resistance factions. The Resistance Alliance has for once ratified a unified strategy of defense, and the focal point is Al-Quds. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Earlier this month, a Palestinian man carried out a shooting attack in central Tel Aviv. Now, his family is facing the destruction of their home. Israeli soldiers stormed the Jenin refugee camp at dawn yesterday and delivered a demolition order against the house of Raad Hazem. His family has 1 week to file an appeal against the ruling. 28-year-old Hazem opened fire on a major street in Tel Aviv on April the 7th, killing three Israelis and wounding several others. Hours later, he was killed in a gunfight with Israeli forces. The regime forces have raided the camp to arrest Hazem's family members before, but have failed thanks to the resistance of its residents. Hamas and other Palestinian movements have hailed Hazem as a freedom fighter and branded the operation a heroic act. Maurice Gargour is a journalist and filmmaker and the director of A Talk with Remarkable People. In a documentary, she explores the geographical changes of the last century in the Middle East, particularly in Palestine. The documentary addresses the concepts of imperialism, colonialism, and Orientalism. We're now joined by Ms. Gargour to shed light on some of the most crucial issues relevant to Palestine. Ms. Gargour, welcome. A Talk with Remarkable People. The documentary explores the roots of the changes made in the region, including the occupation of Palestine. Can there be a solution to the Palestinian issue without taking historical context into account?
Well, this is a very difficult question. I don't think there will be something that is not taking in consideration all the history of Palestine, how it was before, and with the coming of the Zionists from Europe to Palestine. This is impossible for a Palestinian not to be accepted as injustice that was made to the nation of Palestine.
Of course, well, the oppression against the Palestinians, as we know, is not limited to the occupation itself, but a media propaganda in the West also exists against Palestinians. In your opinion, how has Western mainstream media framed the Palestinian cause for the public?
I could say that it's mostly silent. Yes. Dr. Noor Masalha has made a very good conference on the silences of the West concerning the whole history of Palestine in the West. So what we have is very limited. Anything that will go, will pass in Israel, that will be talked about, but in Palestine as a whole, Palestine for me is a whole. It means that historical Palestine before the Zionist occupation in 1948 and the 67 occupation of the land that is now the occupied territories. So there are two, I could say there are two weights and measures, you know, on this very particular problem of the Palestinian history.
And Ms. Garwood, let's focus a little more on some contemporary developments. In your opinion, do you think that the normalization by some Arab governments with the Israeli regime could be exacerbating the situation for the Palestinians?
Oh, definitely, yes. Yes, of course. You know, when some when a problem is historical, this is what is happening is all factual. It's on the ground now, but to make the history of Palestine going and finding a solution, the only way to do it is to take in consideration the injustice that was made to the Palestinians. So whenever the Arab leaders of any countries are making more relations with Israel, it doesn't matter on the real ground of our history.
All right, thanks a lot. Director, producer, and documentary filmmaker Maurice Gargour joining us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Moving on, NATO Secretary General says Finland and Sweden will be able to join the Western military alliance quickly if they ask for membership.
We are in dialogue with Finland and Sweden, and it's their decision. But if they decide to apply, Finland and Sweden will be warmly welcomed and expect the process to go quickly.
Jens Stoltenberg has told reporters in Brussels that he's sure arrangements could be found for the interim period between an application by the two Scandinavian countries and the formal ratification in the parliaments of all 30 NATO members. Russia is strongly opposed to Finland and Sweden becoming NATO members and has threatened to deploy nuclear weapons and hypersonic missiles in its Baltic enclave of Kaliningrad. If that happens, NATO's eastward expansion was one of the main reasons driving Russia towards launching an offensive against Ukraine 3 months ago. Russia could not be any clearer. Keep arming Ukraine and risk World War III. This is in response to the continued arming of Ukraine by the West. Russia's warning, however, is falling on deaf ears since the U.S. and its allies are adamant on providing Ukraine with more lethal weapons. Russia's other threat is also being ignored, the risk of a nuclear war.
The conflict in Ukraine has raised the prospects of an all-out confrontation between nuclear-armed states. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has warned about a real danger of World War III breaking out. In his comments to Russian media outlets, Lavrov added that given the current tensions between Russia and the West, the danger of a World War III was, quote, real. Lavrov also criticized Ukraine's approach to the talks and said if negotiations do not move in a reciprocal way, the negotiation process will be hampered. Lavrov also accused NATO of engaging in a war with Russia through a proxy.
I think that the U.S. and their allies have been pushing the world towards a sort of World War III or even a new Cold War mentality for months and even years now with the kind of propaganda and various official lines that the United States and their closest allies like Great Britain, France, and Germany have been pushing against Russia.
Meanwhile, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba has criticized his Russian counterpart for warning of a real danger of World War III, saying Lavrov's comments indicated that, quote, Moscow senses defeat. Lavrov's warning came after the U.S. pledged more aid to Ukraine. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken paid a top-secret visit to Kyiv on Sunday and promised to supply more arms to Ukraine.
And I think that the NATO encroachment and the furthering of NATO interests throughout Europe as they get closer and closer to Russia's borders justifies some reaction from Russia. And the United States is going to continue pushing in their interest, which is only going to get us closer to World War III.
Elsewhere, most home buyers in the United States are frustrated with soaring prices in the housing sector, which it's almost impossible for many Americans to own property. Official data show some prices rose nearly 19% in 2021. The figures also indicate that the median existing home price for all housing types in March 2022 was $375,000, up 15% from the same month last year. The problem has been compounded by a surge in borrowing rates. The interest charged on a 30-year fixed-rate loan has risen to over 5%, the highest level since 2010, compared to an average of almost 3% last year. Housing supplies were already tight when sales took off during the coronavirus pandemic, but builders have failed to keep up amid a shortage of workers and global supply chain problems, which have pushed housing prices higher. We've talked to Jack Rasmus, the professor of political economy at St. Mary's College of California. He believes the existing U.S. housing crisis will deteriorate.
The U.S. has not been building enough home units, housing units, for median and below people, mostly just high-end, mostly new housing. And the demand, of course, when you have such a short supply, it drives up the price even more. So it's a supply problem. It's also a demand problem. It's also the Federal Reserve's interest rates problem. And we already see in the last month or so a significant decline in new housing construction and purchases. And this is going to only get worse here going forward very, very shortly. It's already deteriorating. So inflation in housing is going to remain with us for some time and get worse. And the problem is the more that housing prices go up, the more that rents go up. That has an effect of dragging up rents, and far more people are renting. About 50 million people are renters in this country, or rental units, 50 million rental units, maybe 100 million people. So they are being squeezed even more, I would say, than new home buyers.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. Another region of arrogance is the achievement that one makes. You may achieve something and make progress in something that you do. Here, you may become arrogant at what you have achieved. Another region of arrogance is becoming confident about God's grace and attention. This has been mentioned in many prayers and even in the Quran. Nor let the chief deceiver deceive you about God. Chapter 31, verse 33. You must take care not to let arrogance, which is Satan, make you overconfident about God. What does this mean? It means that we may become sure of God's help and stop being careful and pious. For example, we may say to ourselves, we are among the friends of Ahlul Bayt, therefore God will not punish us in any way. This is overconfidence about God's assistance. And the most miserable misery is for him who is overconfident about you. This is in Sahifat al-Sajjadiyah. I think it is supplication 46, which is the supplication for Friday. Dear God, he who becomes overconfident about you is the most miserable person. This is overconfidence and arrogance. You must not become arrogant. If arrogance shows up, this will be a sign of defeat and decline. If arrogance shows up from either of these origins, it will be a prelude to one's decline.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
When one becomes arrogant, they will decline from the inside and in society. The social movements that have been formed around them will be ruined as well. There is a holy ayah or verse which says, Assuredly God help you in many battlefields and on the day of Hunayn. Behold, your great numbers elated you, but they availed you not. The land, for all that is wide, constrained you, and you turned back in retreat. Chapter 9, verse 25. The Battle of Hunayn was the first battle that the Holy Prophet had after the conquest of Mecca. There were a large number of people with the Holy Prophet, unlike the Battle of Badr, in which Muslims were only 313 in number. Several thousand new Muslims, immigrant Muslims and Ansar, went to Taif to engage in the Battle of Hunayn. After they had conquered Mecca, when they looked at their own numbers, they became arrogant. God the Exalted broke them because of becoming arrogant. The land, for all that it was wide, constrained you. The land, despite its vastness, became tight on them. And you turned back in retreat.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The Israeli-Russian ties have been deteriorating rapidly over the past few weeks. Most recently, Russia's ambassador to Israel, Anatoly Viktorov, has warned that Moscow will introduce retaliatory measures against Israel in case the Tel Aviv regime supplies Ukraine with military equipment and aid amid the military conflict there. Viktorov issued the warning in a televised interview on Thursday. It was not immediately clear from the Russian envoy's remarks what such a response might entail.
And I think that we'll see strengthening of cooperation and increased military support for Syria and other regional partners of Russia in the region if Israel goes along with supporting Ukraine. And it's important to note that Ukraine has said that it wants to be in Israel. It wants to be Israel in Europe. It doesn't want to be absolutely liberal and European.
The comments came a day after the Israeli Minister for Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, said Israel will provide Ukraine with helmets and flak jackets. Last week, the Russian Foreign Ministry summoned Israeli ambassador to Moscow after Tel Aviv denounced Russia's military operation in Ukraine. It came after the Israeli foreign minister accused Russia of committing war crimes in Ukraine, alleging that there was no justification for Russia's military campaign against its western neighbor. Earlier this month, the Israeli regime voted in favor of a United Nations General Assembly resolution suspending the Russian Federation's membership in the UN Human Rights Council. The move was made over claims of gross and systematic violations and abuses of human rights in Ukraine. The Russian Foreign Ministry called the resolution, quote, unlawful and politically motivated. Taking a sideswipe at Israel and the United States, the Russian Foreign Ministry has said that the longest occupation in the post-war history is being carried out by Israel with the tacit approval of the West. The ministry further bashed the blockade of the besieged Gaza Strip, which Israel says is needed to prevent arms from reaching the Palestinian resistance movements in the enclave.
Well, one of the things that it's important is that Israel saying that Russia has committed war crimes is laughable, since Israel itself has been liable and the charges are severe to their war crimes and human rights violations against the Palestinian people, most recently in the war on the people of Gaza just last year in 2021.
Ukraine has asked Israel for weapons and equipment, including the Iron Dome missile system, something that Tel Aviv hasn't publicly approved so far. Russia has said that foreign weapons sent to Ukraine will be fair game for its military attacks. If Israel decides to sell arms to Russia's western neighbor, will there be a conflict between the two?
So I think it's not yet sure what's happening, but I think what we are seeing is a shift of Israel from being neutral in this current special military operation to openly supporting Ukraine. So it might shift, but it will cost them. It'll cost them heavily because Russia is an important player in Israel-Palestine.
Since Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a special military operation in Ukraine on February 24 and officially recognized the breakaway regions of Luhansk and Donetsk as two republics, the political lines across the globe have been getting redrawn. As Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has warned, that risks the situation spiraling into a third world war.
In a recent report by the New York Times, Canada's main city of Toronto was described as the Wild West of marijuana shops. According to the report, Ontario's provincial government permitted the shops by emergency order to keep operating during the COVID-19 pandemic, even during lockdowns. During this period, to the investors' delight, shares in the stocks of licensed medical marijuana growers in Canada have multiplied in price. However, the marijuana business was already expected to flourish, even before the pandemic started in 2019 and right after Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, to fulfill a campaign promise, introduced legislation to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in Canada, the prospects look good. Eventually, the Government of Canada legalized cannabis for recreational use on October 17, 2018. The Cannabis Act creates a legal and regulatory framework for controlling the production, distribution, sale, and possession of cannabis in Canada. Canada is now the second nation after Uruguay to completely legalize marijuana as a consumer product, in an effort to extinguish the criminal trade and keep the substance out of the hands of youth by regulating the market. However, growing, importing, exporting, or selling marijuana, particularly to minors, outside licensed channels, remain a serious crime. Meanwhile, critics of the cannabis law highlight the damaging impact to society of the widespread use of the drugs. When the use of cannabis becomes more widespread, the drug can also have downsides, including acute injuries and illnesses. In some cases, marijuana could lead to cyclical vomiting syndrome, a condition characterized by vomiting and severe abdominal pain. And also, those who use cannabis are more prone to mental illnesses. While many shops remain closed in Toronto following several rounds of lockdowns and many office towers in the city remain mostly empty, the marijuana shops apparently have a booming business. They were permitted by the provincial government's emergency order to keep operating during the pandemic. In March 2020, during the early months of the pandemic, there were only 12 cannabis shops, but now there are 430 shops with another 88 in the approval process. When Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government legalized marijuana in 2018, its primary goal was to create a more equitable justice system by putting an end to heavily racialized arrests, possession, not a major new business sector. According to a recent government-sponsored report, in only 3 years, sales of legal marijuana in Ontario have outpaced estimates of unlicensed sales and boosted the economy by $10.6 billion. Polls indicate that more Canadians consume it than they did before, 25% of people 16 and up. Violence at the Al-Aqsa compound has surged during the fasting month of Ramadan. It all began when dozens of Israeli military forces stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. Regime forces assaulted Muslim worshippers inside prayer halls while protecting the Israeli settlers desecrating Islam's third holiest site. So far, at least 19 Palestinians have been killed, while hundreds more have been injured in clashes with Israeli forces. This has raised concerns about a slide back into the wider Israeli-Palestinian conflict, like the one in May last year when frequent acts of violence against Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime. But why is the Al-Aqsa compound a central point of contention in the issue of Palestine? Israel-occupied East Al-Quds, where Al-Aqsa is located, during the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. It annexed the entire city in 1980 in a move never recognized by the international community. The illegal Israeli control of East Al-Quds, including the Old City, violates several principles of international law, which outlines that an occupying power does not have sovereignty in the territory it occupies. Following Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds, a delegated status quo was agreed upon, with Jordan giving Muslims the sole right to pray at Al-Aqsa and Jews at the nearby Western Wall. However, Palestinians accuse Israel of restricting Muslim worship at Al-Aqsa while not doing enough to enforce the ban on Jewish prayer at the compound and even protecting the violators. The ensuing Israeli aggression against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa compound is a flagrant violation of the status quo. Next, what has the international community done to put an end to Israeli violence against Palestinians? Well, the regime in Tel Aviv continues its crimes with total impunity, and the international community is silent, except for a few words of caution. The United Nations believes it suffices to express deep concern over the worsening security situation in the occupied Palestinian territories, saying it will probe into the use of force at Al-Aqsa. But is that enough? Perhaps the world's largest and most familiar international organization is too busy, preoccupied, or distracted with the Russia-Ukraine war, but the issue of Palestine deserves the same, if not more, attention since it has been ongoing for several decades. Thousands of people across the globe have taken to the streets to deplore Israeli violence against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and elsewhere in the occupied territories, as the regime in Tel Aviv continues its crimes in Palestine. In Pakistan, thousands of people took part in rallies after Friday prayers in major cities, denouncing the Israeli attacks on Palestinian worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque as naked terrorism and urging Islamic countries to intervene immediately to protect the sacred site and Palestinian lives. Also in Bangladesh, thousands of people demonstrated against the Israeli onslaught. Elsewhere in Jordan, the protesters called for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador and Amman's withdrawal from the Jordan-Israeli peace treaty signed in 1994. Pro-Palestinian rallies, however, have not been limited to Muslim-majority countries. Rallies were held in the US as well as European capitals such as Amsterdam, London, and Berlin. The protesters called for international action, including sanctions to end the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories and the regime's growing aggression.
And so we're on a continuous upward trend, a continuous upward surge in support for Palestine and support for the boycott and isolation of the Israeli occupation and in standing with the Palestinian resistance.
More protests have been organized in other countries worldwide. One of the many online websites promoting resistance against Israel is Samidun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, which has urged all Palestinian, Arab, and international supporters of Palestine to organize events and confront Israeli massacres and ethnic cleansing, events which are held by different organizations around the world.
Israeli military forces have raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds as worshippers gathered for dawn prayers, with medics reporting that more than 40 Palestinians were injured as a result of the raid. Local sources said some worshippers were trapped inside the mosque amid clouds of tear gas, with the regime troops throwing stun grenades at them. According to the Palestinian media, at least 43 Palestinians were injured in the raid. The development comes a day after as many as 30 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli forces continued their violent attacks against worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds. The troops used rubber bullets, tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and pepper spray against the worshippers, who have been braving increasing aggression ordered by the Israeli regime since the beginning of the holy fasting month of Ramadan.
Right now, the site of the mosque is sacred to three major religions, but the Israelis have no consideration for anyone but themselves and their own wants and desires. So right now, when they are entering the mosque, the sacred mosque, attacking people while they're praying, worshippers are there for dawn prayers, and the IDF soldiers and the settlers are simply invading the mosque, firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds of ammunition sometimes, all to terrorize and drive them away because they want the site completely for themselves.
The series of raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one of the holiest sites in Islam, began last Saturday when the Israeli troops injured more than 150 Palestinians there. Israel's new campaign against the Palestinians doesn't stop at the occupied West Bank. On Thursday, the Israeli army carried out airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, targeting positions belonging to the resistance groups. Similar developments last year led to an 11-day war between Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The conflict killed over 260 Palestinians, including scores of women and children. The Arab League broke its silence on the Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa, calling on the regime to prevent Israelis from entering the compound. In an emergency meeting in the Jordanian capital, Amman, the organization warned that Israel's actions threaten to ignite a cycle of violence, and the attacks and violations represent a blatant provocation to the feelings of Muslims. But how will such declarations help defuse the situation when, ironically, countries that have recently normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Morocco, were in attendance at the meeting? People took to the streets of the Jordanian capital, Amman, in solidarity with the Palestinians on Friday, calling on the government to expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Such protests have been held in several different countries, but without a unified international response to Israel, the protests are unlikely to be enough to put an end to such violations.
The international community, as you mentioned, is not doing anything about this. It's so hypocritical to see the international community condemn the things that the Russians are doing to the Ukrainians when the Israelis are doing the exact same things to the Palestinians, and that and their crimes are supported by the United States and other nations.
In the absence of any practical measure taken against the regime, resistance seems to be the only option.
قضیه فلسطین از یادها نخواهد رفت و شهر مقدس بیت المقدس پایتخت فلسطین باقی خواهد ماند و قبله اول مسلمان ها برای مسلمان ها باقی خواهد ماند.
The issue of occupied Palestine will never be forgotten. The holy city of Beit al-Muqaddas will remain forever the capital of Palestine. And the first Qibla of Muslims will always be there for Muslims. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei.
Fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of
worship. إنما سمي رمضان لأنه يرمض الذنوب.
Verily, the month of Ramadan has been thus named because it scorches away sins.
What does Maha Ramadan mean to us?
This is Dialogue, a program on the holy month of Ramadan and the importance of fasting.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program. This is Dialogue. We're talking about the blessed and holy month of Ramadan. The holy month of Ramadan, as you all know, is the blessed and honorable month when the doors of the Almighty Allah's mercy are open. It is the blessed month when forgiveness is easy to gain, but only if we take our steps in this direction. The holy month of Ramadan, the great month when the doors of hell are closed, a beautiful, a blessed, an honorable month, a month where we return towards the Almighty Allah. The holy month of Ramadan, a month where we gain our provisions for our journey towards the hereafter. The holy month of Ramadan, where we establish a connection with our loving, nurturing Lord, our Creator and Sustainer, Allah, exalted and glorified is He. The holy month of Ramadan, the greatest of months, the most honorable of months. This month in which we can return towards Allah. This month in which we can reconnect with Allah. This month in which we can gain the provisions for the hereafter. This, the holy month of Ramadan.
قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله: عليكم بالصوم، فإنه محسمة للعروق ومذهبة للأشر.
Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam stated, "Fasting is incumbent upon you, for verily it severs the roots of desires and removes wildness."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are honored to be able to be living and breathing and fasting in and worshiping in the holy month of Ramadan, this best of months, this best of days, and this best of nights, and the best of hours, where even our breathing is considered to be the worship of Allah. One of the things that is very important that even throughout the year we must make sure that we do in our lives is this idea of respecting, being good to, and loving our parents. Yes, sometimes as teenagers and even sometimes as middle-aged individuals, we tend to not be good towards our parents. We tend to disrespect our parents. We tend to emotionally hurt our parents. We tend to disobey our parents. And sometimes we tend to become angry towards our parents. And it is interesting, this is not just talking about a young child, you know, 5, 6, 7, or 8, or a teenager, 17, 18, right, 16, or even an individual who's young, middle age, 24, 25, 26. But even in our older years, it seems like we have a tendency to not give due love and respect to our parents as much as we should. It is interesting, but even in the Holy Quran, Allah the Mighty, the Exalted, has ordered people to be good to their parents, whether one or both of them attains old age. You know, sometimes when our parents are young, we have a tendency to be patient with them. But when our parents get older, we lose that patience. So one of the things that is very important that we can do in this holy month of Ramadan, and we should do in this holy month of Ramadan, and we should continue for the rest of the year, is to try our best to improve our relationship with our parents, no matter what our age is and no matter what their age is. And not only improve our relationship, but try our best to respect and love our parents. And if for some reason, God forbid, our parents have passed away, then we can always send them good deeds, whether it is in the recitation of the Holy Quran or giving alms and charity on their behalf. Either way, we should remember, love, and be good to our parents. And this holy month of Ramadan is surely a beginning. This is Dialogue, the holy month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Haidar Jaffer.
So what will this month teach us? This month we should be looking for these aspects. One is sabr, patience. One is sabr, right? This is to be patient. And patient at the grievances, the stomach pains, and all these things that we have to go through. And also that we get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that we swim against the tide. The world is swimming in one way away from Allah. We swim against the tide. It is hard to swim against the tide. Those who are swimmers will tell you, it is very hard to swim against the tide, but you can go towards Allah. And to be considerate of others, this is where the idea of Zakatul Fitrah, the Sadaqat, all this in Maha Ramadan is highly recommended. And whether we will be successful or not, the question is that it is an ongoing process. And this is something where we get closer. Look at something else whereby this is a month or for an occasion of gratitude where we thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What does Allah say in Surah Al-Baqarah, Surah number 2, ayat number 185? شَهْرُ رَمَضَانَ الَّذِي أُنزِلَ فِيهِ الْقُرْآنِ هُدًى لِلنَّاسِ وَبَيِّنَاتٍ مِّنَ الْهُدَى وَالْفُرْقَانِ فَمَنْ شَهِدَ مِنْكُمُ الشَّهْرَ فَلْيَصُمْ وَمَنْ كَانَ مَرِيضًا أَوْ عَلَى سَفَرٍ فَعِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ يريد الله بكم اليسر ولا يريد بكم العسر ولتكملوا العدة ولتكبروا الله على ما هداكم ولعلكم تشكرون. Ramadan is the month in which it was sent down the Quran as a guide to mankind, also clear signs for guidance and judgment. So every one of you who is present at his home during the month should spend it in fasting. But if anyone is ill or on a journey, the prescribed period should be made up by days later on. Allah intends every facility for you. He does not want to put you to difficulties. He wants you to complete the prescribed period and to glorify Him in that He has guided you, and perchance you shall be grateful. The operative words are that you should complete the number of fast and exalt the greatness of Allah for having guided you, and that you may give thanks. So the purpose of my Ramadan is to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He has guided you towards Him. He gives you another opportunity to get closer to Him, and once you get closer to be Him, to be grateful to Him.
يا أول كل شيء وآخر يا إله.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Ya ilaha kull shay'in wa malika, ya rabba kull shay'in wa sani'a, ya khaliqa kull shay'in wa waritha.
Dream of returning to my homeland. I felt a strange power in my hands as if they were not mine. They did not belong to a 65-year-old professor with leukemia. They belonged to a man who lived for years with the pain of exodus, exile, and loss. The hands of a man who's been in a search for a lifetime. I am Edward Said. They occupied my homeland, Palestine, and I was forced to live in the United States. The West's support of Israel made it clear that Palestinians must act themselves to liberate Palestine. I was a professor at university, so I talked about the rights of my people and Israeli oppression by writing books, articles, giving speeches, and participating in debates. In those days, Yasser Arafat was the vanguard of the battle against Israel, and I went along with him. But he got tired after a while and made different mistakes, and finally agreed to compromise. I was about to believe that I could never return to my homeland and die with this regret. Yasser Arafat, who was frustrated and hopeless, had to pay for the conflict, and negotiating table was the best place for the West to take revenge.
Arafat agreed to a treaty which broke down the Intifada and created a deep rift between Palestinians. Practically, he agreed with everything, but he did not receive anything in return.
Well, I don't think Edward entertained one day a positive idea of the negotiation.